This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit IMNCT.com for more information.
Hey everybody, it is Lon Seibin here with Behind the Video. This is episode number 60, and joining me, right behind me, we're getting really, like, good production values here. Tim even helped me with my lighting this morning. Tim Street, from Los Angeles, California. Tim, how are you doing today?
Hey Lon, I'm tired as usual, but, you know, what's to complain about? I roll out of bed, flip open the laptop, and do a podcast. That's how life should be, right?
Exactly. Very easy and quick. And we're getting, you know, we've gone from very low production to very high production, and we're still struggling, but it seems to be working so far. And we have a guest this morning, too, don't we?
Yes, we do. Clintus, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, Clintus. It's great to have you on the show. We're going to learn all about what you're doing in a minute, but I wanted to tell Tim something really quick that I found was kind of interesting this week. So I'm on my local Rotary Club, and we had Phil Schleffler, who used to be the chief editor of 60 Minutes, and he did a lot of great shows. It turns out he lives in town here where I live, and he was talking about the ratings they used to get, and their ratings typically in the 80s and 70s were in the 25 to 30 million category, and he said now they're around 8 million. We've been talking about that when we used to do a lot of the TV ratings on the show. It's, you know, Tim, where are these viewers going? Because they're not going to cable, right? I mean, where do you think they are?
Well, it's everything, you know. If you really want to get like a inside scoop on it, Ashley Schwartz on her blog, Furious Minds, Red Fury, I think is her Twitter handle. She goes into detail about the upfront ad sale this year and how the TV networks are charging more for less and getting away with it. So she's kind of like, hey, bully for you guys, but hey, what's going on here? Why are people paying more? So it's social media. It's Netflix. It's everything that's out there. There are so many things now for people to be distracted by, whereas the 70s and 80s, it was three different TV networks that they could tune into. But now, instead of watching All in the Family, you can watch people like our guest, Clintus McGinnis. Tell us about your show.
I am... Oh, there you go. Yeah, gotta give my camera to my wife, actually. So I've actually been video blogging for about 7 years now here on YouTube, off and on, and up until about, well, I don't know, 497 days ago, the wife and I decided to go daily, and so we capture our lives. We have two small children, and we try to capture the most riveting moments of our life and share it with everybody here on YouTube.
So you're doing stuff every day. I mean, is this just normal stuff, or are you manufacturing some of it? What kind of tell us a little bit about what people show if they tune in, or we'll see if they tune into your channel.
Well, yeah. So one of my new slogans I like to tag my videos with, or my tweets and stuff like this, I do it for the vlogs, because I try to think, okay, you know, we can go to the park, we can go to my mom's house, we can go to my brother's house, and so instead of just like sitting at home watching TV, I think of things that we can do both for us and for fun, but also for the vlogs to make them entertaining. We are weekend warriors, as we like to call ourselves. We go camping, we ride dirt bikes. We're from Phoenix, Arizona, so we go swimming a lot during the summer and go to water parks. But I mean, yeah, 7 days a week, there's going to be at least probably 2 days a week where we don't leave the house just because, you know, we can't. You know, we have full-time jobs, and the kids are in school now, and so there's going to be some days where we don't leave the house, and so those are the days where we have to get real creative around the house, whether it's playing like an interactive video game where, you know, like, kind of like the Wii, we have PlayStation Move, so, you know, we have the controllers and they're moving around playing games, or we play board games, or we just, you know, have fun with each other, and those tend to be the smaller videos, right? Those are the 4, 5, 6 minute long videos, whereas the weekend ones will tend to be more like 12, 15 minutes.
And are you doing this full time, or is there other income that you have as well?
Yeah, my wife and I both have full time jobs at the moment. Well, my wife's working part time now, but we're starting to make a little bit of income with our daily videos. But to be honest with you, most of the money actually comes from a few videos that have kind of, I don't want to say they've gone viral, but they tend to drive most of our views via SEO. So search results and stuff like that are bringing a lot of eyeballs to the channel. And then I'm hoping that they see that we're daily, they watch a couple of our daily videos, and then they get hooked, right? They subscribe and they stick around because it's like, oh, okay, they're cool. You know, this video was cool and this got me, you know, to look at their channel, but because they do this every day, I'm going to stick around.
And is it SEO based on searches for products that you might be featuring in the video? Is that the SEO that's bringing people in?
You know, the number one video of ours is it's titled "Merry Christmas 2011," and the thumbnail is my kids on these two dirt bikes in their pajamas with their helmets on, and I bought them dirt bikes for Christmas that year, and so the search results are dirt bikes for Christmas, kids opening gifts, and so it's just getting tons and tons of traffic. Mostly from suggested videos. So people are like watching other kids getting dirt bikes, and my video is like the number one recommended video at the top, and it just keeps getting clicked on. And then from there, it trickles down to our first dirt bike ride, my daughter riding by herself for the first time, and then our other dirt bike videos. So that's a big traffic driver for our channel. The other one being first day of school. So my daughter just started third grade, and her first year of kindergarten. That is the number one search result right now. At least as of last week, it was the number one search result for first day of school for both YouTube and Google.
So the big question is, have your videos paid for the dirt bikes yet?
Yes, they have.
There you go.
Yes, they have.
There you go, right there. Your kids got dirt bikes thanks to your videos.
Exactly.
And I bought a TV studio in my basement. Same thing, but it works. It works out really well. So, was it hard getting the family on board with this thing? Was it something you and your wife kind of decided to do together, or did it take some convincing? Because it is, kind of a lot to, put your kids out there. And as this channel grows, it's certainly going to gain some notoriety and some attention. Is that something you talked about as a family before you jumped in?
Yeah. As far as the dailies go, yes. I mean, again, I've been making videos with the family off and on for 7 years. And, and first it was started with just me, the talking head like this. And that was my first, five or six vlogs. And then it was more of like, this is what's going on around me, right? This is a moment with my daughter or a moment with my brother or something like that. And then it was more event-based stuff, right? So we went to a baseball game. We went to a birthday party. And those were the videos. And there were, two or three a week. I kind of got away a little bit from it, and I was just doing more of like what I call moment showing, where it was just showing a moment of what was happening in front of me, just kind of to share, instead of a tweet or a photo, it was like, this is a moment in video that's happening right now. But then when I decided to do the daily thing, the first thing that my wife said was, do we have enough stuff to do this daily? I mean, the video's going to get boring. And like I said, we're pretty active people. The kids are playing sports. We go out on the weekends a lot and do stuff at whether it's at somebody's house or actually out at an event or something like that. So it's evolved. Today is going to be 498 days straight, and so they've evolved. And in fact, my wife actually just started vlogging with me about 2 weeks ago. Up until then, it was pretty much just me on camera or the kids on camera. And her talking through the camera at the kids. And just like 2 weeks ago, she started turning the camera on herself and, talking maybe 15 seconds here and there. And the audience loves it. They just, the comments, the feedback was just, oh my God, I can't believe Tiffany's vlogging. This is awesome. Keep up the good work and getting that praise. And she reads the comments, so she saw all that.
And it's been interesting, that's too, because I've seen, I was expecting when my channel started to pick up some steam that I was going to get a lot more of the trolls in there, and I don't get that many. It's actually kind of nice that...
Oh, now you will.
Yeah, now I will. Now all the jerks will come out and say, Clintus, you're doing a lot of output here, so, how do you do it? Is there a workflow that you've adopted that gets you to get this stuff out a lot quicker? Because I think a lot of times you're probably having to sacrifice some choices, right? Some things that you'd like to do, but it would mean it would take longer. Do you find yourself often making those choices, and what kind of things do you do to output video very quickly?
Yeah, I definitely, that's the number one question is how do you do it daily? How do you, when I was at VidCon, I'm, hanging out with a lot of vloggers and I can't do it daily. I do weekly or I do a couple times a week or something like that. It's definitely a routine. So basically I wake up 5 a.m. and I hit the computer, right? If I remembered to import the footage and open up Final Cut and drop them in there, the night before. So I literally at 5 a.m. I'm rubbing the sleep out of my eyes and I'm sitting down on my computer. I edit usually anywhere from a half an hour to an hour, depending on how much footage I have and how much of it was shot by Tiffany. Because if I've shot it, I kind of already know what's in my head, what I need to trim and cut out. If she's shot it, then this is the first time I'm seeing it. And then I usually, you know, I'll encode it while I'm getting ready for work, you know, hit the shower, grab some coffee or some breakfast. And depending on how long the video is, I will start to upload it before I leave for work. If not, if it's still encoding, then I just leave for work. And I get to work, I log back in remotely to upload it. If it's already been uploaded, then I log into YouTube and I title tag, description, you know, and I'll usually, if I can get to it right away, I will schedule it. I try to get my videos out about 12:30 Pacific Standard Time. Around that front time frame, and my audience is known to look for it by that time. Because if it's late, I usually start getting tweets or Facebook posts on our wall about 2:30, going, "Where's the video?"
Wow! So people, your subscribers are really expecting something to come out by a certain time. So that does put some pressure on, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. And speaking of that, and you kind of mentioned it when you asked your question, you know, some sacrifices. The only time that it really becomes an issue is when we go camping. Or when we're traveling, we do camp quite often in the summertime. And you know, if you do it right, there is no Wi-Fi. There's barely cell service. And so, my commitment, my dedication to my audience is to get a video up every day. And I won't stop recording. But we went on a cruise back in April to Mexico, and I mean, cruises internet is just ridiculously expensive and ridiculously slow. And so I kind of prefaced before we left saying, "Hey guys, depending on the internet situation, you may not see a vlog until we get back, in which case you'll get like, you know, two a day until we get caught up." And since then, every time we go camping and I kind of preface, "Hey guys, I'm not sure what the internet situation is going to be, so just heads up," the comments are always like, "Dude, don't worry about it. Have fun with your family. Right. You know, you'll get them to us when you do." And thus far, I haven't had a situation where I couldn't get them up. I just, like, we were camping 2 weeks ago. I drove into Payson and sat at a coffee shop for 2.5 hours to upload the video.
Wow. That's dedication. But you got to do it, right? That's what people are expecting. So.
Yeah. And again, I mean, there's a small handful of people that say, "Don't worry about it." But I know the majority of people are still expecting it. They're, you know, and the fact that I do that, and I make a big, you know, I vlog, "Hey guys, I'm at this coffee shop. I'm going to have some coffee and donuts and just, you know, let my stuff do it." That shows, again, more dedication to them. And I hope that it shows that, you know, I really do care about them and them coming back each and every day.
That's a good point. And I think that's what it is just build and develop that audience quite a bit. How do you engage with your audience? Do you do it through YouTube mostly, or is it through Facebook and other means? What's the primary vehicle?
YouTube is definitely the primary vehicle. I do a weekly live chat very similar to this. It started with Google Plus Hangouts. And then after I joined Full Screen, I got access to YouTube Live, and of course now everyone has YouTube Live if you have more than 100 subscribers. But I switched to YouTube Live just because I can schedule it. It shows up in their subscription box when I do it that way. And the audience is on YouTube, right? And a lot of people are asking, like, why don't you use YouNow and other services like Ustream or something like that? And I could, and obviously there's going to be people who have users there or accounts there, and they can go and create them. But our audience... A very large amount of our audience are kids. I'm going to guess and say from 10 to 17 is a big chunk of our audience. And so I don't want to make it more difficult for them. They already have a YouTube account. They're already watching us on YouTube. And so it just makes it easier that way. So I do that once a week, Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific. And I do it for an hour to 2 hours, depending on, you know, what I have going on here and how engaged the audience is. This last Wednesday was probably my best one yet. Just so many new people going, "Hey, this is my first live chat." And plus, we find a lot of people from doing the live shows because I end up getting featured on youtube.com/live, their live page, under the people and blogs category. And I'll get, you know, at least 5 or 6 comments going, "What is this? Just found you on the live page. Who are you?" And I get my little quick introduction spiel, you know. And I never ask people to subscribe. I always say, please go watch one of my videos. Go to our channel, watch a couple of our videos, watch our trailer. And if you like what you see, then subscribing is the easy way to follow us. But I'm not huge about just going, "Hey, subscribe to my channel. I need subscribers." I want you to watch our videos. I want you to enjoy them and become part of what they've dubbed themselves as the Clintus Clan. And so I definitely engage mostly on YouTube, but I also, you know, will follow or interact a lot on Twitter. And when people like the videos and they get shared to Twitter saying, I liked the video from Clintus, you know, with the link, I try to reply back going, hey, thanks for sharing. You know, thanks for the support, that kind of thing. We also have a Facebook page that I interact with. And when people post photos or do little images for us, I will post them on the Facebook page to kind of give them, you know, recognition and whatnot.
And they're following you here, too, because we've got a bunch of them in there. So Jason X Dragons, who says you're the greatest vlogger on YouTube. So he's here for you. So thank you for bringing him. And a few other folks also. And there's one comment about the audio syncing in here also, and that's just due to the Google Plus thing. And we're still working out the best way to do that. But it's cool. I mean, you've got a great little following happening here, and it's amazing that you can do this from home, you know, with, you know, some effort, but you don't have to have all the things you used to have. And, you know, when YouTube started, and Tim might want to chime in on this too, the vlogger, sorry guys, my switcher just had a little snafu here. The vlogger world was a little different. It was more people just kind of, you know, looking at the camera and talking, and now you've got to do a lot more, right? It's that interaction with the camera, but also a heck of a lot more. And Tim, this has changed a lot, right? I mean, I think when YouTube first started, that's all it was webcams and face to camera. And now it's, you got to do more, right?
Yeah, it's definitely changing. I mean, the early days, the community was the video bloggers group on Yahoo. You remember that, Clintus?
Yep, I still get the emails too every once in a while.
Yeah, and it was mostly made up of a bunch of angry young males that were, you know, pontificating about how things were going to be and how big business was going to come in and ruin things for the little guy. Well, ironically, it seems like the little guys have ruined things for big business when you know, talk about 60 Minutes and their viewership. So it's death by a million cuts of people watching other stuff on YouTube and interacting with social media. But the formats are changing. I mean, just like the early days of TV when they were doing radio shows on TV, stuff's changing. And, you know, I'm curious, Clintus, who are some of your who are the folks that inspired you? Who are some of the video bloggers, vloggers that when you were starting out or as things developed on YouTube where you were like, wow, I really like what these guys are doing?
Yeah, so the early days, honestly, I found the one that started it all for me was Paul Robinette, also known as Renetto. Bald guy, big, thick black glasses. He was. I saw his talking head, floating head, on a website called Pop URLs, and I think Amanda Cogden was the one who pointed that to me out years ago. And it was just a page of aggregate other sites, and YouTube was one of them. And it was just his head was all over it. I'm going, who is this guy? I clicked it. I watched one of his vlogs, and I was blown away that he had, you know, hundreds of views, thousands of subscribers, and he's just talking to the camera. And I must have watched four or five of his videos, and I was like, I could do this. Like, I hate writing. I would try to blog, and I would write this big, long blog post, and I'd go back and read it, and I would delete a bunch of crap, and I'd read it again, and I'd delete a bunch of crap. And next thing you know, I was down to, like, three sentences, and I'm like, ah. And so I was like, I could much rather talk than write. And so I immediately started, like, searching for video blogs, and I somehow stumbled across Scriggity, which was Drew Olenoff's show back in the day. And from his site, he had a bunch of other people's sites linked. And so that's back when the blog roll and the links of blogs was just huge, because I was just going one after the other after the other. I found, you know, Steven Zotti's Jet Set Show, and I found Casey and Rudy's Galacticast, and all these old school shows. I mean, these guys were way, way ahead of their times. They were making TV shows on the web. And you, Tim, with French Made TV, like Tiki Bar TV, all of you guys were just way, way ahead of your time with jumping into this space. And so I found a lot of the shows, but then again, from blog rolls, I found Jay and Ryan, you know, their vlogs, and Michael Verdi and Shlomo. And so I was watching those, but I was watching the shows at the same time. And I think I went like 6 months without watching TV, because I was just so engrossed with these online shows and these online people, where I was connecting with these people watching their blogs. And so I would say that Ryan and Jay were big inspirations at that time, because of, again, their style of vlogging. You know, Ryan had more of the talking to the camera, whereas Jay had more of what he called moment showing. That's where I got that term. His blog was called Moment Showing. And so my first vlog was like 10 minutes right here in this room. I had my nice big Canon XL2 because I was into filmmaking at the time, and you know, I did my first vlog, and it was like 10 minutes long, basically talking about why I wanted to vlog and how it came about, basically the spiel I just told you guys. And then from there, it started getting into more like topical, and I got caught at one point though where I was talking more about video blogging than actually video blogging. It seemed like my videos were more about what should I vlog about, what should I talk about, what would you guys like to see, instead of actually, you know, talking about what's going on in my world. As time got on though, those people started to slowly kind of stop being creators and be more of curators. Everyone kind of seemed to get jobs in the space versus actually working in the space, if that makes sense. And so the inspiration started to change over the time. I got real heavy on Vimeo. I actually stopped using YouTube at one point because of the haters and the trolls. Vimeo seemed to be, you know, so much more supportive and you know, they liked the videos and they would say, thanks for posting. We love them. Can't wait to see the next one. And YouTube started to bubble up. That's when Philip DeFranco and others really started to bubble up and get this huge following. And iJustine, actually, a long friend of mine, she jumped over onto YouTube and really started taking flight over there. And I remember being on a panel with her and Chris Perillo at PodCamp AZ, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And she called me out in front of the audience and in front of Chris, saying that Clint, you know, Clint just hates YouTube. And Chris, I remember looking at me, like two seats over, going, "You're a video blogger, and you're not on YouTube. Like, what is your problem?" And so we went to lunch, and I told him my story, and I told him, I said, "That's why I don't use it." And he's like, "Okay, even if you don't use it, you need to put your videos up there because it's the number two search engine in the world, and it's going to go big. Google owns it now. It's going to be huge." And sure enough, you know, within, I'd say, another 3 months, I started seeing a lot more traction, a lot more videos being shared. You know, Vimeo was still great, still is. I love the site, love Vimeo, the service. But YouTube has become what it is. And so I jumped back over and I started really promoting my YouTube channel. But at that point, you know, I felt that I had missed the boat, so to speak. Everyone else was just climbing, and they've already kind of made that big circle. And I've been playing kind of catch-up ever since. And it wasn't until I went daily last year that the channel really started to take flight. And it was Charles Chippy from CTFXC and Shay Carl from the Shaytards that kind of inspired me to go daily. I was watching CTFXC for a while, and I really loved that style of daily vlogging, right? The faster cuts, jumps in time, very small rants, nothing real big, long rants, but real short little snippets. And then obviously with the Shaytards having the family atmosphere and the family angle, I was like, there's obviously an audience for a family style, you know, where I can include the kids. And so that between those two, that's what kind of, you know, gave me the idea and the push to go daily.
And how'd you wind up with Full Screen?
They reached out to me back in March. My partner manager, Cassie, shot me an email and said, "Hey, we found your channel and we really like your videos and we'd like to, you know, should tell you what Full Screen has to offer and would you be interested in joining the network." And of course, you know, I never really looked at networks. I'd heard of Full Screen and Maker and Machinima, but I assumed that you had to have a certain subscriber base or certain, you know, stature on your channel to be picked up and signed with one of those. At the time, I think we were at like 2,300 subscribers, and so I just assumed, okay, they like what we're doing, and they think they see potential. They want to get in, you know, early, so to speak. And so that's kind of how that started.
And how's that relationship work for you so far? Obviously they're taking a little bit of some of your revenue, but you're getting a guarantee of a certain amount. If you have certain confidentialities, obviously you don't break those. But you know, what's worked for you in that relationship that you felt was better to be with them than to just continue as your own independent producer?
Yeah, well, again, not looking too much into it until they contact me. Then I started obviously doing some research. I just assumed it would be beneficial to me and our channel to be with a partner, to be with a network versus being independent. I figured the way I looked at it was an opportunity to open doors to more opportunities. You know, I think immediately you get – the idea is you get signed with this a network and you're immediately going to, you know, skyrocket to fame or your channel is going to blow up. And I didn't have that mentality going in. I basically, this is an opportunity, and
but you have more than doubled your subscribers since you're with them. I mean, you're like 7,000 now, and you were 2,300 then.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing too. Is it because of I joined them? Is it just coincidence? I was already on the up and up, and that's why they jumped in. Like I don't know. There's no way to quantify that. But since I started joining them, I basically unhooked the host from YouTube and AdSense and plugged it into full screen. So my metrics and my stats go there, and they track me from the time I signed, both on views and subscribers. And of course, it's this ramp up, like you said, going like this. But yeah, I mean, right away I was all gung ho, like, I'm on full screen now. My sub network is called Vlog Union. They have these subverts of full screen. One's for fitness, one's for comedy, one's for vlogs, one's for music and cover, artists. And so I'm with Vlog Union, and they were retweeting my videos. I was featured in the newsletter that gets emailed out. And just the fact that I promote myself as a partner with Full Screen and Vlog Union, I think also, people are searching Twitter for Vlog Union and Full Screen, I'm going to come up in the search results, right? So again, just being able to label myself as being part of the Full Screen family in itself is self-promoting.
Excellent. Well, thank you for all that insight. We're going to talk about some of the top tens and all the other news of the week here. So if you don't mind sticking around, Clintus, we'd love to get your take on all of our banter as we work through this. And for our viewers watching, we're going to take a few minutes after the show for you to call in. So we'll give you a link that you can dial in via Google Plus. And Jessica 1993 writes us here and says, hey, Clintus, you're awesome. We get to see more of you every day. And she says, you still haven't shaved. So get out the Gillette. So let's take a look at the top tens on YouTube. Jason Perrier, our producer, collects these this week and every week. Number five is cat wearing a shark costume, and there's a cat on a Roomba with a shark costume on. And this there's been a lot of good social media work here by Discovery on this Shark Week thing, right, Tim? I mean, this is. Everyone's wearing shark costumes.
They always do a great job on Shark Week, don't they? I mean, everybody loves Shark Week. Why wouldn't you love Shark Week?
Yeah, and look at that. And who what's better than a combination of Shark Week and a cat on a Roomba? So there you go. That's number five. Number four is Girlfriend versus Boyfriend by PewDiePie. And, I don't get him, but people do. So great. He's still making his bucks. One day, Clintus will be up to the 4 million views he gets every week he puts a video up. So that's a living right there. Football on your iPhone looks like a commercial from DirecTV. So a little video there. We can't play a lot of these because we'll get kicked off of YouTube. So we'll just have to look at the stills here. Number two and one are trailers. So Krish 3, the official theatrical trailer. I didn't even know there was a Krish 1, but there you go. And number one is Thor. Another Marvel comic video is on the way. Tim, these Marvel comic movies are really doing pretty well, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. Disney's now got them, so they're part of the machine, and I think we're going to see them, just keep going and going.
Yeah, they'll keep moving there. Clintus, what movies are your kids into? What's their thing?
Well, obviously, any of the animated stuff that looks funny. I think the last two ones they saw were Monsters University and Despicable Me 2, and they absolutely loved those. I started taking my son to the Marvel ones last year. I want to say Thor was the first one we went to, but he wasn't quite digging that one as much, not as much action. But then we went and saw the Avengers, and he absolutely loved that. It was his sixth birthday, or no, I'm sorry, it was his fifth birthday. And he absolutely loved that. And then since then, we've seen like Iron Man 3 and a couple other movies. But he's definitely becoming my movie buddy. And so we'll go and see a couple of the action packed ones. We went and saw Pacific Rim, and that was awesome.
That's great. Yeah, there's some good films out there. My daughter is only about 3 months old right now, so she's not up to movies yet. But I'm going to look for some advice from you later when I've got a little kid to deal with. So here's a timely topic, Tim. YouTube network Full Screen is being sued by music publishers over music covers, and that's this is kind of going back to where YouTube had its issues from the get-go, which was when Viacom sued them for a gazillion dollars over the fact that people were doing these lip sync videos, you know, using recorded music that was copyrighted, and kind of the compromise became Content ID, which we all have grown to love and hate, mostly hate, where, you know, YouTube will automatically find that copyrighted music and then allow the record label to take a cut of the ad revenue versus the creator. But now we're seeing some really, really nice high-end covers being done of popular songs, and the music industry is like, hey, wait a minute, those are our songs, and these people are making money, and that ain't right. So rather than suing YouTube, they're going after some of these content networks, Fullscreen being one of them. Tim, what are you hearing in the industry about this, and is this going to change a lot of what we see showing up on YouTube and other places?
Yeah, I think it's going to change things a lot. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out and if there'll be an opportunity for folks to keep doing it and somehow share in the revenue or at least benefit off the traffic. I mean, some people will make a cover and then they'll set that video so that it doesn't they don't earn any revenue off of that video because they don't own the rights to it, but yet they'll still benefit off the traffic, off the views that will get them more subscribers. So they are leveraging somebody else's property to make more money, to get more, you know, get more subscribers and make more money on their other videos. This is one to keep an eye on for sure, to see how it plays out. And if there's any opportunity for the independent, or if it's like, hey, the genie's going back in the bottle, you do that, you're going to get shut down.
And Clintus, do you do any cover songs? You don't do any music on your show, right? So you're pretty clear of all this, right?
Yeah. I wish I was talented enough to do some covers. In fact, I've kind of probed my daughter, saying, "Hey, she loves karaoke." I'm like, "Hey, we should do some cover songs." Fullscreen actually has, like I mentioned, a sub network called RMC. I forget, but it's basically it's their music vert. And about 6 months ago, they announced this big deal with two of the three big record labels, where they actually had access to their music, and they could do covers, you know, legally, if you will, because they gave them access to cover song versions of their songs. And so I saw this article, and I'm trying to figure out who, what, when, where, how, because like I said, as far as I know, that they had two of the three, so it must be the third that's causing the rift.
Could be. And the other thing is, you know, you think about when you go to like a local bar and you see, you know, a local music artist there, you know, playing, they do covers a lot of time and nobody gets any money from that, and they build a following there. So there is kind of this argument that I could see taking place to parallel YouTube as the new local pub. Mm-hmm. But I could also see the other side of the argument as well.
Yeah, this is one of those things. And, you know, we found, at least with artists that aren't signed by major labels, that there was always an amplification effect that drew people in. Psy from Korea, like, who would have heard of him if they didn't kind of loosen the reins up and let people do their own Psy dances across the web? And he certainly benefited tremendously, even on his sophomore release in the U.S. at least, that, you know, he's still among the top channels on YouTube because they relaxed those restrictions. And it's, you know, it's a bizarre thing. And at the end of the day, it's publishers suing fans. And I agree, there's a time and a place that you need to protect your rights, but I've seen some really great covers that, you know, really honor the songs that they're doing. But, you know, traditional copyright models being what they are, that's what you end up with, and it's not an easy situation there by any stretch. But one thing that we're seeing, though, is the reemergence of the two founders of YouTube, the two guys that could have retired at 25, are now forming a new company that is called what is it called? It is called Mixbit.
Mixbit.
So, Tim, they're trying to, you know, create another Instagram, it looks, or not Instagram, but another Vine. Instagram,
yeah,
kind of thing. So what's up with this?
So I got to play with it a little bit this week, and it's interesting. It allows you to make videos and upload those videos, and they can pretty much be up to like an hour long. But it seems like it's going to play out and develop. Because you're not really building a channel, you're not building a place for yourself. You're just uploading these videos, and these videos are the way that you discover them is through search. You know, they get tagged, you tag them, or you can be featured, which right now looks like it's manually that people are being featured, or it's just recent videos. So discovery is still a little bit of a problem. I don't. see anybody that's building a particular brand there, but much like Instagram or Vine, you can record a few videos on your iPhone, and then those videos can be edited on your iPhone. They can be shortened, but it's very simple editing. It's just editing one clip to another clip and shortening. You can't, right now I haven't seen a opportunity to, like, you know, add voiceover or remove audio from one video and put that audio on another clip. But you can mix footage from other people's from their videos. You can, you know, put them into your new cut and then make that cut available. So it'll be interesting to see how this develops, because it's not so much handcuffing people with the shortness, it's handcuffing them with the editing abilities on how they can do things. So there's the feature page if you're watching live right now, and then you can click on, you can go back up top and click on the recents, and you'll be able to see what has just been uploaded in the last couple of minutes. And then if you see the different color bars across the bottom, each color bar represents a different video clip. So some of them only have one clip, others have you know, multiple. Like the one you're showing now has multiple clips all in this same video. So you can tell just by looking at the colored bar underneath the video.
Right.
It's not real easy to title. Like, you don't notice where to title at first. So that's a little bit of an issue, but I think it'll work out. Now, you can embed these videos, you can tweet them, you can Facebook them, but I haven't seen an opportunity to build a following, to build, you know, an audience of your own yet.
Right.
It may be there, but it's just not apparent to me. And, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I'm also not the stupidest guy in the world. I'm just not seeing how to build a following there yet. Other than, you know, being somebody that appears there regularly, that is somehow noticeable, so that when you show up in that thumbnail, people know, oh, there's that, you know, girl in the bikini I need to click on.
Right, and actually looking at it here, I don't even see, like, a way to know who even created this video. I mean, I clicked on the video.
Exactly. Yeah. You can see what they've done, and I mean, obviously they could say who their name is, and
right,
so they could build an audience that way, but from a text standpoint, I'm not seeing how to build a channel or a following or make friends or anything like that.
And
so there's no advantage right now to anyone that's famous, other than showing up and people, oh, look, they're here, you know.
Right.
So it does level the, they got to, yeah, there's, well, or do they, you know, it's something new. It's a new format. So I'd say check it out. See if there's something inspiring about it. See if you want to use other people's footage. I don't see a revenue stream here yet, and I don't see a way of building an audience yet. So that's kind of the downer side of it from a business standpoint, but there's certainly stuff to do there that's fun.
And, you know, it looks cool. I think they've got, certainly, like, being able to pull in clips that you've shot outside the app is pretty helpful. I guess the app isn't out yet, right? It's coming out Thursday?
No, the app is out.
Oh, is it? Okay.
You can use it on your iPhone. On your iPad, there's an iPhone version of it, and you can log in on the website and do it as well.
I'll have to check that out.
I just haven't figured out how to pull in footage into an editing software other than Mixbit and take videos that are available on Mixbit and edit them elsewhere and then put them back in.
Right. And you know, what's been amazing is I've been following Vine, and there's people now who are huge, huge, huge on Vine. They have tens of thousands of subscribers. We talked last week about how, you know, I heard somewhere else where two very popular Viners got together, you know, and kind of did a joint video together to kind of boost out their stuff. And the community growth there has been unbelievable. And we talked about this before, like the limitation of that 6-second video creates so much really neat creativity to work within that. Within that space. And I've been finding myself just browsing Vine a lot more. Clintus, are you on Vine at all? Are you doing that? Because there's a lot of people maybe looking for you there. It's more work.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Vine. And it's funny because, you know, Instagram came out with they launched their video side, about a month and a half ago or something like that. And of course, everyone's like, oh, it's going to be the end of Vine. And the thing is, like you said, the 6-second limitation and the restrictiveness of Vine is actually what's made it so successful. I follow a lot of comedians on Vine because 6 seconds is about enough time to give you a punchline, right?
Right.
There's a 2-second setup, there's a 2-second you know, delivery, and then there's the punchline, and that's it. And so I follow a lot of comedians, and I think it's awesome. Instagram's great, and I think the fact that you can shoot and then delete a clip if you make a mistake, and I think it's 15 seconds, it has its place. And of course, Instagram is huge with millions of users, and people already have established audiences there and followings, being able, you know, using it for the last couple of years. But I don't think it's going to kill Vine. I think Vine has made its place, especially since it's owned by Twitter, and it's got so much integration with other tools. I think you said it. The limitations and the restrictiveness of 6 seconds and not being able to go back. You have to be very creative. As soon as you touch that screen, this is forever, right? Unless you have to start over.
Right.
And because of the easiness of just tapping the screen, you see a lot of animated GIFs or animated stop motion, that kind of stuff. And so I think I think Vine's here to stay, and I love the platform itself. I watch, like you said, I'm browsing through it pretty easily. It has some scalability issues, I think, in my opinion. It seems like from time to time it's hard to watch Vine videos because it takes forever to load, which you think with 6 seconds they'd be super easy to do. But
right. Yeah, it takes a little bit of time. And the sound, you got to be careful with the sound, too, because you don't realize if you're on your iPhone, if you have the ringer off, that it is recording sound unless you turn it off. So, you know, careful. Be careful what you say, because you might run into trouble on there. And, you know, I think the other thing is that, especially with YouTube, I think my motivation to create more YouTube videos is that I make money off the YouTube videos, and I'm having some revenue share there. You know, I'm not looking for the attention. I'm looking, you know, I like the audience. It's very important to me, but I'm doing it because it's helping pay the grocery bill every month now. So that's kind of my motivation to do more is, yes, to engage my audience, to do all the stuff that I'm doing, but, you know, I'm not spending a lot of time on platforms where I can't monetize them. And I think that's, especially with Facebook, you know, rumoring to drop these video ads in where they're going to maybe have $1 billion play just on the video ad plays. You know, what about the creators that are putting this stuff in there? Maybe they could cut us in a little bit too, right? So we'll have to see.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I actually created another channel called Clintus Now, where it's basically an iPhone channel for video shot on my iPhone and then uploaded right away. And that's kind of my shtick, is that these are when I share this video, it just happened, right? I'm not going to shoot it and then wait an hour, right, and then when I get some time, upload it. It's right now.
Close to live, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Closest to live as I can get. Because I used to do that a lot. When the iPhone 4 came out and it, you know, shot 720p video, I was like, oh, this is amazing. I can shoot and trim and upload right now. And then iMovie came out for the iPhone. I was like, oh, I can even add clips now and combine them. And so for about a year, my main channel, the videos all came from my iPhone, and they were shot, edited, and uploaded all from the iPhone because I was lazy. I was like, this is awesome. I don't have to import footage. I don't have
to fast.
You know, dump it. Yeah, exactly. And so I've kind of liked the fact that I've got another channel to kind of experiment and do that stuff kind of with. And again, my audience is on YouTube, so it's just another way to kind of loop it back in.
Right.
You know, I'll mention it in the main vlog that, hey, I'm going out such and such tomorrow.
Follow this other channel, right, and be able to do that, and you can,
yeah,
you can
more up to date updates, and so and then I partnered that with Fullscreen as well. So again, there's a little bit of, you know, possibility of revenue as well, and that I have a gaming channel as well, so I've got three channels total.
It's funny how you keep compounding these things, and you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about, I've started doing these app reviews because there's like little, I like the retro games on the old iPhone and stuff. And they're so easy to make because I have all this junk here captures stuff, and I can just hook this thing up to the iPhone, crank one of these things out in 5 or 10 minutes, and they're fun to do. But I'm thinking about creating another channel. But I'm like, well, am I going to get all these subscribers over there? You know, it's a tough thing, right, to kind of connect the two.
Yeah, it's hard to decide what to put. And I went back and forth with creating the iPhone channel for over a year because I was like, you know, do I separate it and just make this just the daily vlogs, or do I keep it all in one channel because this is where my audience is and this has the most subscribers? And I did a few here and there. Like, I shot a video one time in the middle of the desert because we were riding our dirt bikes, and I said, hey guys, today's vlog is going to be up late because da-da-da-da, we're out dirt bike riding.
Right.
And, you know, and everyone's like, yeah, I can't wait for the vlog, you know. So it kind of built up the anticipation there. But this way, at least I have another brand, if you will, and something else to look forward to. And if, you know, you want to subscribe to those smaller bite-sized moments of stuff, then they can. And what I was getting at is that channel is only 2 months old, and it already has more subscribers than my gaming channel.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, there's definitely an audience for that.
Absolutely. So we're going to jump ahead a little bit on our show notes here, Tim and Clintus. We're going to move on to movies real quick because we're running a little bit long, but it's okay. We're really enjoying the conversation. So we've got top movies this week. Number five, Two Guns. That's their second week, $48.7 million overall. Another, you know, action shoot 'em up kind of thing, right? Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters, came in at number four, $22.8 million. Planes 3D was number three. This is its first week, and usually these Pixar movies kind of, like, you know, dominate, and didn't happen this week, right? That's a little surprising, Tim.
Yeah, for sure. I think it could be maybe Disney's taking over Pixar too much. I don't know.
Because they're cranking out, right? It used to be once a year. Yeah. Now this is like
It also just looks like, you know, another Cars movie, except it's planes,
right,
which that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was my impression. And I am one of the few people that not a big Cars fan. Like, I haven't watched it. It didn't draw me in. And so this one was the same way as, like, just not my thing.
So, and Clint, is your kids interested in planes, or is it kind of lackluster?
Yeah, we'll probably go eventually, but I'll be honest with you, we're going to go see Percy Jackson first.
Okay.
Because I'm definitely more into that one. We saw the first one and we loved it, and so we'll probably go see that before we see planes.
Got it. All right, and number two is, I think, Percy Jackson, right? My computer just crashed here. There it is. Where the Millers is number two, $25.7 million this week, $37.2 million overall, and number one, Elysium.
You know, that's the one where Jennifer Aniston does a strip tease.
So. Oh, is that where the Millers?
Yep.
Oh, that's probably driving. That's all they've shown, and that's all people needed to hear about, right?
So, there you go. That's what got people out.
It's the oldest marketing trick in the book, and it still works. So keep that in mind, folks. Please don't do anything inappropriate.
Don't do that on family-friendly merchandise.
Exactly. Be careful where you exercise that. And Elysium is in at number one at $30.5 million, a little sci-fi flick, kind of a Halo-looking thing up there. You know, you go, class warfare thing. So check it out if you're interested. I'm going to wait for Blu-ray on that one. Couple brief items in the news here. Hollywood is fighting China over a luxury tax on movies. You know, that happens. New cable brand takes a page from Netflix, and this is according to Ad Age. Cox Communication is going to have a more personalized TV experience for viewers. You know, we've got that bill working its way through to try to allow people to do a la carte kinds of cable purchasing. In fact, my senator here from Connecticut, Blumenthal, is one of the people supporting that, and their industry is not happy about it, but that's going on. So we'll see where that goes. And cord cutting, according to multichannel.com, is no longer a myth. People are doing it. I've kind of cord cutted. Tim, are you cord cutted?
I've definitely downsized. There's a lot less channels. I did cut the cable cord. I went to satellite and then pared down the satellite. So there's very few channels now. The only reason is HBO.
Yeah,
and having HBO Go.
Exactly.
I have the minimum package that I can get to get HBO.
That's exactly what I'm dealing with. Clintus, are you a cord cutter at your place? You're probably making so much video, you don't have time to even watch anything, right?
It's hard. But I have to little disclaimer. I actually work for one of those networks,
gotcha.
And so therefore I get free cable.
That works.
But if the time comes where I no longer am employed with them, I would probably definitely downsize and the bare minimum. I watch stuff on HBO. I watch stuff on Cinemax. So, but you know, it sounds like HBO is starting to pay attention to their audience and are dabbling with the idea of making HBO Go a standalone thing. I think the problem is, and the same problem with the a la carte packages, is that these networks make too much money forcing MSOs to take the full package.
Right, exactly. The whole industry will, this is like, it's one of those things, whoever makes the first move is going to tear down the industry probably in a week. And the ones that will survive, I think, will be probably Comcast, given that they supply a lot of people, you know, and most of the cable providers, for that matter, you know, supply a lot of internet to people. And I think that, at least in my interpretation, is probably the highest margin product they have, next to phones as well. So, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But you know, one of the things people should look for, because what I did here at home, I have the Blast internet speed, which gives me the ability to have a live broadcast studio in my basement, and there was a secret menu of options available to me at Comcast I wasn't aware of, and I discovered that for an extra $10, I can get HBO. So that's what I did. And I keep it, you know, my basic service was pretty limited. One thing, though, I'm going to be doing a little bit of work on this week is that Comcast now is trying to encrypt all the channels that they were giving unencrypted, you know, all the local networks that I get here in Connecticut. They're going to start encrypting next month. And I think there's a little funny business going on there to try to get people to go rent boxes from them to bring more revenue in. And that's a bit of a problem, but we'll see where that goes. So we'll move on to our app and tip of the week. So Tim, I've got a neat little thing to show you here. We've often talked about vidIQ, right? That's that great little analytics software that you can use to keep an eye on your channel, and it's getting better. I logged in this morning. I didn't log in for a couple of days. Popped in today. There's a lot of great new tools. It's a lot faster. It's really looking great. And another thing they came out with is this really neat little statistics bar that you can install as a Chrome plugin. And for every video on YouTube that you look at, yours or anyone else's for that matter, you get this really cool look at, let me try to zoom in here, at what that video is doing. So vidIQ has a score. So this is my latest one here, 18 out of 100. Shows you how many views you have, how many Facebook likes. It has a neat, it's got some graphs here. I don't know what these do, but it has a way to track who's tweeting you on the internet also. So it's got a neat little thing here. I kind of like this. And
yeah, Rob Sandy and the vidIQ team were at VidCon, and they were exciting people with all the tools that they have. And, you know, not only for content creators is vidIQ a great tool, but it's also, if you're a brand, it's huge on tracking your brand and tracking the videos that you're doing.
It's really cool. So I'm using it a lot. And what's nice about it is that, you know, vidIQ has always done a really good job of kind of consolidating all of these different analytics for your video. But you can now see how other people are tagging their videos and what kind of descriptions they're using, and look at some of the best practices that when you see someone doing something similar to you are, how you might be able to increase your visibility a little bit. So this little plugin is pretty helpful for that. So that's all I had this week. Tim, any tips or anything else you want to chat before we close out the show?
No, I think we should sign off and open it up to folks who want to interact.
All right, so we will close out the show here. You can watch us live every Sunday morning, 8:30 a.m. Pacific, 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. We're going to keep this time for a little bit. We'll see if maybe we'll play with doing an evening show at some point in the future. But we've had a good amount of viewership in there. And thanks, Clintus, for having some folks join us today. Clintus, where can people find you on the internet?
My main channel is youtube.com/Clintus. I'm just Clintus on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere else. Basically just Clintus. But yeah, daily vlogs around 12:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Excellent. Well, we will check that out. I'm going to make sure I'm subscribed to you. I think I might be, but we'll add another one, get you closer to the 10K mark. We'll see how I'm sure you'll get there pretty soon. And Tim, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at OneTimStreet.
And you can find me at Lon Seidman, LonSeidman on Twitter. LonSeidman.com will take you to my Google Plus page. And please join our Google Plus community, BehindTheVideo.com, where you can send some ideas into the show and chat with Tim, me, and a whole bunch of other fans that are slowly accumulating for our show. And we're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, too, for audio versions of the show. That'll do it for this edition of Behind the Video. We are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JasonPerrier. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.